from the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Emerging artist bumper music tonight, first Sunday, for the first couple hours. And by the way, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the wonderful artists and some of the work they've done. Later on tonight, Atlantis in the Caribbean. Here's what's happening. What a tragedy over the weekend. The death toll now from a fire at a converted Oakland, California warehouse known as the Ghost Ship has now risen to 33, and teenagers were among the victims. Officials estimate that between 35 and 40% of the partly collapsed structure's remains had been searched as of Sunday afternoon, and the crews clearing debris were expected to find more bodies as they advanced in. As many as 100 people apparently were there for a party late Friday night when the fire broke out just before midnight. Fire officials were still investigating the cause of the blaze, but they said that clutter fueled the flames. There were no sprinklers inside, few exits to escape. What a nightmare that was and is. American Airlines Flight Attendants Union has called on the airline to recall its new uniforms, claiming that the garments are to blame for a string of health problems, including headaches, rashes, and respiratory problems. American and the union, the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, have been jointly testing the uniforms to determine if the clothing is responsible for the reactions that have triggered more than 1,600 health complaints by cabin crews. The airline has also offered uniforms made of alternative materials. Now, the union said that the flight attendants have been reporting headaches, rashes, hives, burning skin, eye irritation, itching, respiratory problems, and they said they're related to the new uniforms. And I suspect the dye in the uniforms or some chemicals that have been used are causing that. Hawaii is bracing for another foot of snow. That's right, Hawaii, in addition to the 2 feet that landed on the island's highest mountain peaks since Thursday. The snow is falling on the peaks of the Big Island of Hawaii, including Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea, and the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for the area through late Sunday night. Robert Felix, author of Not by Fire But by Ice, about the coming ice age. Robert, what the heck is going on there?
Well, you know, I've been saying all along here that I think we are headed into an ice age, or at least a little ice age. And so I'm not surprised by this. You know, now it does snow on those mountains, those volcanoes above 11,000 feet. But this has been going on now for 4 days, which is unusual. So it's... You know, I'm seeing that happen. I'm seeing extreme cold. You've probably heard about this, but we're looking for extreme cold to grip most of the contiguous United States in the coming week, you know, the lower 48. And we're talking about lots of snow in some areas. Meteorologists say they're going to be measuring the snow in feet.
Jesus. Something happening to the sun, Robert?
I think it all has to do with that. You know, the sunspot cycle. Right now, we are having the fewest sunspots that we've had in more than 100 years. And we're already down to what people call the Dalton minimum, and which is a period in the early 1800s when there was a period of a dearth of sunspots. But even, I hope we don't go into what's called the Maunder minimum, because that was the known as the Little Ice Age. And that was a period when sunspots didn't happen for like 50 years, or almost no sunspots. And it led to huge famines. That, the thing I want to impress here on anybody listening is, you know, have that food available. I'm not trying to sell food on my website. I think you know that. But you know, I've been saying for years that we'll be fighting in the streets for food long before we're covered by ice.
Well, you're right about that, Robert. Thank you so much. Robert Felix, Not by Fire But by Ice. A victory for the people, finally. The Army Corps of Engineers says that it will not grant an easement for the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline in southern North Dakota. handing a victory to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and its supporters, who argue the project would threaten a water source and cultural sites. This is a major story, and I am glad the outcome is this. There's evidence that white wine may increase the risk of melanoma, the most deadly type of skin cancer. The new study from Brown University will be published in the journal Cancer Epidemiology. So be careful. A study of more than 200,000 adults for an average of 18 years showed that each drink per day of white wine increased the risk of melanoma by 13% among men and women. Solid job gains and a 9-year low unemployment rate in November put the Federal Reserve on track for an interest rate hike this month, and indicates that President-elect Donald Trump will inherit a steadily growing labor market, although one that still needs some key improvements. Andre Eglishon, author of Thieves in the Temple, with us. Well, what do you think, Andre? Give me your prediction.
Well, I think, George, first of all, thanks for having me. I do believe that we will experience an interest rate hike in December, and the Fed is going to have a hard time in not doing it. They've telegraphed this even back in September. We had the Fed and the Fed Bank in San Francisco, along with even the Fed chair, when the unemployment rate was about 4.9%, saying, listen, you know, you can expect an interest rate hike by the end of the year. I think the markets have already priced it in. But when we had the jobs numbers come in at 4.6%, even the U6 number, George, which includes people who are unemployed, underemployed, and those who are just discouraged, that even fell. So, you know, you're looking at a lot of positive economic data. And the numbers are what they are. I mean, you know, think of it whatever you want. But, you know, we've had unemployment cut in half since the onset of the Great Recession. We've had the Dow Jones average that has tripled. We've had the deficit reduced by 2/3. Inflation is relatively low. We've had the auto industry turn around. We've seen a doubling of clean energy. So that's a lot of positive news. And the Fed, I'm betting, will raise interest rates before the end of the year based on all this positive news. Other than that, they would have to wait and risk the economy, you know, going, you know, overheating. And then they got to react, I think, in a way which may end up being too harsh.
Probably it'll be just a little increase just to send a message, don't you think?
I think so. I don't think, and I think that the chances of the Fed having the guts to do it again early next year are slim to none. I look for a modest increase, probably 25 basis points, and for the Fed to take a good long look at what's happening in the economy, because they don't want to stifle economic growth, George. I mean, the economy is growing. It's growing slow, and there are a lot of people that are still left behind, particularly in the Rust Belt states, you know, from Pennsylvania over to Wisconsin. And, you know, you don't want to hurt those folks. We got to do something to try to get investments going in that area. But if you do that under under a climate of higher interest rates, I mean, go figure. I mean, it's probably going to be a little slower.
You got that right. Hey, thanks a lot, Andre. And have a great Christmas if we don't talk to you before that. Up next, the coming financial crisis. For the next 2 hours, we are going to be talking about one of the most important subjects that faces you and your family. John Truman Wolf back on Coast to Coast, and he's next. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. John Truman Wolf back with us, has been a senior credit officer for two California banks. He is the co-founder of the very prestigious Los Angeles-based business management company, where he oversaw the business and financial matters of some of the biggest names in Hollywood. Wolf has a master's degree with honors from San Jose State University, author, couple books out, Crisis by Design and The Coming Financial Crisis. John, welcome back. Good to have you.
George, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
So is it a little too early to sing Happy Days Are Here Again?
Well, that's a good lead-off question. There's certainly a lot of indications that some happy days are coming. I mean, the election is what? A month into it already,
yeah.
A lot of positive stuff going on, George.
Sure. Now, when we talked back in Feb, talking about the coming financial crisis, it didn't look like things were going to be this rosy. Have things changed, or what do you think?
Well, I think things have changed, and you know, George, I would say, as I presume so many people have said, nobody expected this administration, and this is a very, very business-friendly administration. And so in February, things were looking rough. I mean, there's still very deep problems in the banking system, which we can talk about. But there's a guy now running the country that is very business-oriented. And so, as your, I think the fellow's name was Andre there at the top mm-hmm. of the hour noted, I think there'll be a bump in the Fed rate. But this is a president who's going to be very focused on jobs and the economy. So, no, this couldn't have been predicted in February. And rather than it being a steamroller, George, that I would have looked at in February, there are now two very strong competing agendas. One is the agenda of the business-friendly Trump administration, and the other is the fact that there are a lot of endemic problems in the banking system and in the financial structure, and they won't go away with a blink.
If you were to write another book, knowing you probably are, John, what would this new title be?
Well, I haven't got the title yet. I've messed with some titles. I'm about on chapter 6 of a new book, which focuses on the decline and crash of the petrodollar on which the global economy has been based, George, for 50 years. The petrodollar means that this is a deal that Nixon and Kissinger made with the King of Saudi Arabia some, whatever it's been, 50 years ago or so, that all oil had to be purchased in dollars.
Right.
When the U.S. went off the gold standard in 71 and closed the gold window because Charles de Gaulle demanded his gold for U.S. dollars, finally Nixon said, no, that's it. Now central banks didn't need to keep dollars because they were gold-backed. But Nixon and Kissinger made this deal with the head of Saudi Arabia, the king of Saudi Arabia, which mandated that oil be purchased in dollars. And that went not only from Saudi Arabia to the other OPEC nations. And so for the last, you know, 40-some-odd, almost 50 years, central banks have had to hold on to dollars because every nation needs oil like a body needs oxygen.
That's right.
That has created an inflated situation with the dollar, made it falsely in demand. And that system now, George, is beginning to come apart. A little while back, Russia and China made a $400 million gas and oil deal for yuan and rubles. This would have been unheard of a few years ago, George. Everything was, all international trade basically was done in dollars.
Isn't that also one of the reasons why we went in and toppled Saddam Hussein? Because he wanted to get rid of the dollar for oil?
Very, very definitely one of the reasons, for sure. We wanted to control his oil. There were plans even before 9/11 to, take the Iraqi oil. But Saddam in November 2000, said, "I'm now only going to accept euros for my oil, not dollars." And you don't mess with Uncle Sam's payment of dollars for oil.
No.
U.S. foreign policy, U.S. military policy has been focused on the protection of the drilling, transportation, and payment of oil in U.S. dollars. And when Saddam said, "I'm not going to do it," that was it.
That was his mistake.
Same thing happened to Gaddafi.
Yep. Both of them.
Yep.
Now, in your book, the subtitle of the coming financial crisis is A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain. Who's the wizard in this case?
The wizard in this case, George, is the Bank for International Settlements, based in Basel, Switzerland.
Okay.
This is the godfather of the global financial mafia. Most people have never heard of this bank. This bank is above the law. By that, I mean that while it's based in Switzerland, Swiss law does not affect it. Its employees are immune from prosecution. They have their own military or police force on the property. It's above the law. And it is the central bankers' central bank, meaning the Fed, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of Japan, the People's Bank of China, 55 central banks in the world are members of that bank. And it is that bank, George, that dictates to the central banks. The central banks, of course, control the economies of their respective countries. And it is that bank that is basically calling the shots. So that is the wizard behind the curtain.
So with Donald Trump as the president-elect, already he seems to have worked out a deal with the Carrier Furnace Company to keep 1,000 jobs back in Indiana, which I think is phenomenal. I mean, I can't remember the last time a president got involved directly to negotiate something to keep a company in town. So you got to give him credit for that. He's talking about adding a 35% tariff tax on goods coming into the United States that any U.S. companies might be producing outside of here. Is he aiming toward the right thing? Is this plan going to work?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this deal with Carrier was just stunning. And the fact of the matter is he's got another 60 days before he's actually the president, and he's making deals. And the current news is Ford, who said, 36 hours ago, that no, they are still planning to move their factory to Mexico, yesterday came out and said, we're willing to talk to the president about this. So this guy's got some leverage. This guy is a negotiator. That said, I'm not a fan of those tariffs. But
they could backfire on us, can't they?
I think it could. I definitely think it could. But this guy's a negotiator, George.
Yeah.
I think he's throwing that out there. He's just putting it out there. So you're a CEO of some company that's thinking about moving. You're going to think twice.
Exactly. Why haven't other presidents gotten this aggressive economically? Probably since Reagan.
Well, they're not of the same mindset, George. I mean, this guy is a business guy.
Yeah, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist, John, to try to figure this out. You could do it. I could probably do it with the right advisors. It's almost as if all the other presidents wanted to create this globalism to shut us down here as a producing nation.
Well, you're right, George. You're right. Certainly, the Obama administration has been focused in that regard. I mean, I don't want to get into an Obama bashing conversation, but the guy was a community organizer. He doesn't know anything about business.
But he would surround himself. He should surround himself with great economic people.
But he didn't.
No, he didn't.
And even George Bush, who was a business guy coming out of the oil industry, was also a globalist. Let's be frank about it. Trump is not that way. And I think from my mind, as I watch this, the big challenge is, are the globalists going to get to him and turn his mindset? Because as he is now, he's an independent, wild card. So the question is, to what degree will globalists grab hold of the policies of Donald Trump? And I hope that's not the case. But the other guys, as you said, have been in that frame, Obama, Bush, Clinton, all of them.
John, we've got people from all walks of life that listen to this program, listening to you right now, talking to me, and they have different kinds of jobs. I mean, they run the gamut of police officers to hospital people to truck drivers to stay-at-home moms or dads. I mean, all kinds of jobs, teachers, they're all listening to the show, wondering, what does the future hold for them economically? What do you tell them?
Well, I think given what's occurred over the last few weeks, I think the future looks, just as we discussed, looks a lot brighter than it did a few months ago. That said, to all of the folks that read my newsletter and that read my books, I strongly encourage folks to, get some precious metals and keep them at home. I'm a big fan of silver. Take some cash out of the bank and stick it under the mattress or in your safe. We can talk about what's the reason for that.
Sure.
But those folks, to protect themselves, should have some precious metals, should have some cash. And meanwhile, take advantage of what's coming down the line. I think the future, the economic future of the country looks good. You've got kind of an odd situation, a yin-yang situation in the stock market. While the Dow Jones is kind of, after Trump was elected, jumped up several hundred points, the Dow composite, the Dow Jones is 30 stocks, George. The composite is all of the stocks. And that measurement is still downtrending. It has not broken into new highs. So There's you know, troubling data there. There's troubling data.
All right. Well, stay with us, John. We're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come back with more. John Truman Wolf's websites are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And we're going to take your calls next hour with John Truman Wolf here as we talk about your financial future. John, you were talking about grab some cash, put it away. What are you concerned about?
I'm concerned about the American banking system, George. I'm concerned about the fact that there are $227 trillion, that's with the T, trillion dollars worth of derivatives primarily held by the big money center banks in New York. These are the branch banks, the B of A's, the J.P. Morgan Chase, the Wells Fargo's, the banks of that nature. Derivatives, for the folks that aren't familiar with this kind of, you know, financial speak, are simply, most of the derivatives, let me say, are mostly casino-like bets on the direction of interest rates. They're called interest rate swaps. That's just a word. So, you know, just as an example, B of A thinks the interest rate on Greek bonds is going to go up. Deutsche Bank thinks they're going down. And they bet, George, and that bet becomes a derivative, it becomes a security, and then people bet on those bets, and then people bet on those people's bets, and on it pyramids to the point that there's now $1.2 quadrillion worth of derivatives in the banking system and or the financial services system.
That's more than the 2008 debacle.
So much more, George. So much more. And the U.S. banks have a huge piece of that. And if interest rates, you know, go up, which they're going to do, I mean, I feel strongly that that's going to be the case, some of the banks are going to get slaughtered because some of the banks have got the other side of that bet. So my concern going forward is the banking system, and it's why I tell people to have, you know, some precious metals at home, some money at home. I don't want to be a doom and gloomer, but I think if this happens, I think unquestionably there'll be a bank holiday. I don't mean they'll close forever, but like during the Depression, I think the banking system will likely close down.
How much money should we have? I mean, most people have a difficult time, John, just saving $100.
Well, it's true. I mean, you can just kind of gather it. You don't have to go, you know, grab it all at once. But, you know, at least have a month's worth of your budget stashed away. And if you have to do it a little bit at a time, do it a little bit at a time. You know, if you can do more than that, that's good. But I would at least have a month's worth of budget in cash at home, a few $1,000, and some silver. So, because if there's a bank holiday, George, they'll, you know, you won't have access to your ATM. You won't. Your credit cards won't work.
Chaos.
It will be chaos.
It's like the power grid going down, which is one of our concerns from either an EMP attack or a solar flare from the sun. I mean, if the power grid goes down, John, we're all up a creek.
Very, very similar. You've got a, you know, a chaotic system that the country isn't set up to handle. And for the, as you're talking about, the, you know, the everyday working guy and gal out there, this is something that they should do. You know, is this going to happen tomorrow or next week? I don't think so. But the truth of the matter is there are some very powerful pieces of regulation of banks coming down the line in 2017 and on January 1st, 2018. So I would be prepared. And if you're, you know, folks are just scraping by, you know, start with $100, take $100 and then do a couple hundred and, you know, build it up to where you've got ideally at least a few $1,000, you know, in your, in a home safe.
I was at the bank Friday and the guy in front of me was getting cash out of the bank, or at least he wanted to. And the bank told him, sir, please call ahead.
You're kidding me,
George. I couldn't believe that. Now, what does that tell you?
Well, there is, I mean, it's reasonably common knowledge, at least for those who read the financial press, there is a war on cash. There is a very strong movement to eliminate cash.
The banks, for example, I'm not going to give the name of the bank, but I have been told, because after I heard that, I did a little checking, that most banks do not have a big cash reserve on hand. They have to call ahead to some place and get it brought in.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, when I was a manager of a headquarters office of a bank, and this goes back some years ago, but we had a very limited amount of cash in the safe. You know, banks take deposits and they lend them out in loans, and then they make investments in treasury bills. So they have very little cash as a rule. So there is, along with that, a war on cash, meaning there is an effort to get rid of cash in the financial system and to replace it with the zeros and ones. If your method of payment is a digital bank account, then the government can monitor exactly what you do, what you do with it. They can tax it. You can't be independent of the government in that regard. And that's being pushed very, very strongly in Europe, and it's starting to be pushed here. I think it's okay to say a name because it's in the press. Citibank has outlawed cash, and they don't use cash in four of the banks in Australia.
Jeez.
So this is happening. In Europe, there are limits on the amount of cash. I read one story where a couple was traveling on a train in France, and that most you can carry in cash there in France is 2,500 euros, and these people had more than that, and they got fined. So there's similar laws in Scandinavia. The effort is to get rid of cash and to convert the financial system to zeros and ones. If you're going to do that, one of the things that folks might want to look at is bitcoins, which gets outside of the banking system and puts you kind of in control of digital money, which is...
That scares me, though, because of hackers and people like that.
Very difficult to hack a Bitcoin wallet, George. I mean, very difficult.
Right, but it's happened, though. What was it, a couple months ago they had a problem that, a percent of Bitcoins were missing because of some hackers.
Yeah, they can hack a site. If people store the Bitcoins on an exchange,
right,
then they can hack them there. If you have them stored in a wallet, in a Bitcoin wallet.
What is a Bitcoin wallet?
It's basically a digital place where you can store your Bitcoins, and the algorithm to get into a wallet is longer than the wall in my office here. Very, very, very difficult to hack those things. Some of the exchanges have been hacked, and there is that liability. So rather than have your Bitcoin sitting in a Bitcoin brokerage, you can get a wallet. You know, folks can go online and get a Bitcoin wallet and get up to speed on that. I've got a newsletter story on this I published last month on Bitcoins and how you do that. It's coming, George. Digital currency is coming.
It is coming. There's no doubt about that.
This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is happening as we speak.
Tell us about negative interest rates.
Negative interest rates. Yeah, I mean, you first hear that term, you go, how could there possibly be negative interest rates? Here's how that works, George. In quote the old days. End quote. If the government wanted to borrow something to, let's say it's a local government, they want to build a stadium and they issue a bond, or they issue an IOU to people, and people buy the bonds and the state or the county takes the money and builds whatever it is they're going to build. So you've got a bond, let's say, that pays 5%, and every year, let's say you put $50,000 in, so every year you get $2,500 in interest, and at the end of 10 years, if that's the maturity date on the bond, you get your 50 grand back. No more, George. There's $14 trillion of negative interest rate bonds, so the person puts the 50 grand in, they don't get any interest, and when the bond matures, they get back $49,500.
Jeez.
That's negative interest rates, and there are...
What kind of an investment is that?
Yeah, exactly. But it's huge in Europe and in Japan, and my prediction is negative interest rates are coming to the U.S. Janet Yellen has kind of floated that, sent that up a flagpole, got kind of a negative response, but I think it's coming.
So if you've got a savings account and you put $10,000 in it and there's negative interest rates, and let's say the negative rate is, 1%. That means that you'll have 1% less than what you put in.
The bank would charge you, and there are banks that are already charging negative interest rates, and they charge you for holding your money. That's exactly right. It would typically be, well, we'll see what those rates are, but, you know, 0.5%, 1%, 1.5%.
And if you wire money, they charge you. If you get money wired in, they charge you. They have fees all over the place, John.
Yeah, they do for sure. Banks make a lot of money on wire fees, but that's different than negative interest rates. You give the bank the money, and as a, not to diverge too much, but folks should know, when you put your money in a bank, it's no longer your money. The money belongs to the bank.
That's
true. You are an unsecured creditor. The bank owes you the money, but that money belongs to the bank.
And you may be insured by the FDIC up to $250,000, but that's still not a guarantee, is it?
Well, not with $20 trillion in debt at, you know, on the surface. And
I mean, if it all goes at the same time, you're not going to get it back.
That's right. And this bail-in policy, which we can talk about, is the policy of banks being able to take depositors' money without their permission and converting it to bank stock. Bail-in policy is official policy in Europe. Starting January 1, 2016, the first European bank was bailed in a few months ago. Canada implemented bail-in policy on March 22nd of this year. The FDIC has issued a white paper on how bail-ins would occur. They have not announced it as official policy yet. So the question is, which I've been asked because I write about this, okay, well, aren't I protected by my FDIC insurance? And the paper that the FDIC wrote doesn't mention insurance at all. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to cover it. Maybe they will. Probably they will. But I thought it was odd that they could write a paper on how bail-ins are going to work and not even address the subject of depositors' insurance.
There's a bank here in the St. Louis area, John, where I am during the holidays, and it started in mid-Missouri and started branching out and did a remarkable job building other branches in other cities in Missouri. And the president of the bank, everybody out here knows him, built this thing up, and all of a sudden, he's been forced to resign. Now, this is a bank he started, and his board of directors forced him to resign. Nobody knows what's going on or why, but he's gone. What could have happened?
Boy, that's an interesting story. I don't know. I mean, that's odd, particularly if he built it up himself. I mean, what one can assume and kind of guess that he sought to implement policies that were contrary to, the board
or the feds.
If there's a solicitation to buy the stock and sell the bank, and maybe he didn't want to sell it, and some big bank wants to buy it, and the board of directors have got a lot of shares, and the president's going, I don't want to sell, and they go, well, here's your parachute, dude.
Something happened. It's strange, and they've hushed it up really fast.
Mm. What's the name of the bank?
I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
Okay, and then you can do a little homework.
I'd be interested. I'd like to look into it. But this is real stuff, and this bail-in policy. One of the things I encourage folks to do is move out of these huge, large money center banks that are full of derivatives and get into a smaller regional bank or a credit union. It's safer.
Actually, I'll tell you the name of the bank because it's been in the paper, so it's public.
Okay.
It's called Sterling Bank. So check into that. And
I'll do that.
And this is the one in Missouri now.
Yeah.
But I'm very curious to see what happens. I mean, everybody knew the guy, but something happened. And very curious to see what happened. If you're going to buy a house, I keep hearing the bubble's going to burst again. What do you hear?
Well, it's approaching that. It's approaching that direction. I mean, I think if we have a bank collapse, certainly the real estate market will implode. As rates have started going up already, if you look at the bond market the last few weeks, the bond market has been slaughtered, meaning rates go up. When rates go up, the value of bonds go down. And for the last few weeks, that's what's been happening. So as rates go up, it gets more difficult to get a mortgage on a home. In the Southern California area, and I know you're a transplanted
back and forth,
Angelino, the market here, the average price of a home here is extremely high. And if
Now, they dropped considerably in 2008, right?
Yeah, they did, and I think that will occur again.
So you would wait?
If it were me, I would wait. Yes.
Now, you may be right. But the question is timing. We just don't know when.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sitting here with a crystal ball, and I could be, I could be dead wrong. I mean, my perspective is that it's beginning to approach what it was in 2008, and you know, the cost of homes are high. Now, the attractive aspect is, generally, even though mortgage rates have started to inch up, they're still insanely low. I mean, mortgage rates have gone, George, from 3.5%, this is 30-year fixed, in the summer, to about 3.9 now, but it's still...
That's still low.
Very low. So payments can stay down. I would say to folks that are looking to buy a house, you know, and you're set on doing it, if you're going to take advantage, if you're going to do it, now would be a time to take advantage of those rates. If you're looking to stay into that house for several years and raise a family and that kind of thing and not concerned about buying it this year and selling it next year, then I would take advantage of the low rates, because I think they're going up for sure.
What are you hearing about the default rate, individual default rates?
I haven't seen any. It's not bad right now. It's not bad.
All right, so that's good. I mean, because during the bubble of 2008, it was kind of high, wasn't it?
It was horrid. Yeah, it was very high. I mean, there were a lot of foreclosures, lots and lots of foreclosures.
People would just walk away from their house.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. There has not been a lot of that, and there's no news in the stats that I read. Do not indicate, high foreclosure rates at this point. Not at all.
The Chinese government flew you to Beijing. What did they want to know?
It was an interesting trip. You know, a friend of mine in Taiwan got a copy of my book and sent it to a friend in Beijing, you know, and she said, you know, the Chinese government would like to talk to you about solutions in the book. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
I said, you know, have them fly me over business class and put me up in this hotel. I knew Beijing. And she sent me back an email and said, you know, they'll fly you any way you want. They'll put you up wherever you want. So I flew there, and they, you know, flew me business class.
Was it the government or some private companies?
No, the government.
Wow.
The Chinese government. I spent a week there with some, you know, reasonably high-profile people. The answer to your question is this, George. They're very focused on gold. I had dinner there with the president of China Gold, which is the Chinese government's 60% owned gold mining consortium. This guy's got 40,000 employees, George, and he's buying up gold mines around the planet like Pac-Man. And so he wanted to discuss, you know, what I thought would be the case with the gold backing the yuan, the Chinese currency. They were looking at doing that, and they're still talking about doing it. So the Chinese government continues to accumulate gold very, very aggressively. If they back the Chinese currency even partially with gold, it would soar.
That sure will. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you next, John.